Here's Andy Udman.
Now to some significant health news to report in the battle against a cervical cancer virus. There's been a dramatic drop in the rate of human papilloma virus among teenage girls. HPV infections in girls aged 14 to 19 is down 56% since 2006 when the vaccine against the virus first came on the market. It's proven to be so successful, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control now recommend vaccinating all girls as young as 11.
The CDC announced that there was a dramatic drop in HPV infection in girls and young women since the advent of the HPV vaccine. This is despite the fact that in America, the majority of girls and young women do not get the recommended three courses of HPV vaccine.
Pam Colleen, settle down. Stop putting your fists through the wall. Here's a report that says HPV infections among teenage girls have dropped by 56% thanks to the vaccine, which you have been slamming incessantly.
Or the vaccine industry in general. I'd like to hear the reports in another 5 or 10 years, 20 years, how well these girls are doing after that time frame. There's so much more to health. And to make these claims is giving people a false sense of hope. I mean, there's thousands and thousands of diseases we could be dying from.
Folks, we're talking about vaccines. You know how Pam Colleen feels about vaccines. And if you're just joining us and don't know who Pam Colleen is, how do you like to introduce yourself at the various functions that you're at, Pam?
Well, I'm a nutritional consultant. I'm an author. I'm a contrarian, of course. I like to question things. And
a
I think
chip
it's very
disturber.
Healthy. Yeah, I think we need a lot of people out there looking at things differently. We can't just take things for face value. We need to dig deeper than the actual story.
I should tell you folks that we are trying to hook up at this very moment with a very interesting guest, and we have a backup if we don't connect with her, because apparently she's going through customs right now, is on her way to London, and she is a highly respected author, filmmaker, medical doctor, and anti-vaccine advocate. Tell us about Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, Pam.
Dr. Sherry Tenpenny is actually one of the leading critics out there in the area of vaccines, and she's a big proponent of alternative medicine or holistic healing. Now, Sherry is American, and she will be in Canada tonight. As you mentioned, she is traveling right now. We're trying to reach her on her cell phone. But she's speaking tonight to a sold-out crowd.
Just down the street here.
Down the street on Wellington Road, and she's speaking at the Lamplighter Inn, Best Western Lamplighter Inn, at 6:30 tonight. They only had room for 180 people, and apparently it's sold out. So if anybody wants to be there, the lecture starts at 6:30 tonight, and they may make room for people who don't mind standing during the actual seminar.
One of the things about talk radio, folks, is you never know what's going to happen, and you always have to have a plan B. So we have not yet been able to connect directly with Dr. Tenpenny. We're hoping to do that momentarily. But in the meantime, I want to share with you an interview that I lifted from the internet this morning, being interviewed by Dr. Alex Jones, who is anything but low energy, shall we say, Pam.
I don't think he has the title as a doctor, does he?
Jones,
yeah.
Alex Jones interviewing
Dr. He's another contrarian, yeah.
Yeah, he certainly is a contrarian. So, Rick, while we're waiting to hook up directly, and we may interrupt this interview with Dr. Tenpenny to talk to her directly. But anyway, this interview, believe me, does nicely set up her visit in London tonight on the issue of vaccines. Listen to this chat. Alex Jones, the contrarian, interviewing Dr. Sherry Tenpenny on the issue, which we, Pam and I, have spoken about so often. Vaccines, do they work? Are there harmful side effects? Give us your best 30 seconds on vaccines, Pam.
Well, I think that we've had a delusional love affair with chemicals for the last 40 or 50 years. And I think that we have to see that the writing is on the wall. We've been depending on chemicals as our answer for our health problems for a very, very long time now. And yet, look at how sick we are. We need to wake up, smell the coffee brewing, so to speak, and say that there has to be a better way than this. And what we've been doing by turning to chemicals is we've been ignoring Mother Nature. And we know that Mother Nature has the answers. It's just that anybody who embraces the notion that Mother Nature can help us with our health crisis, that we are somehow deemed the competition, the enemy, that, you know, Mother Nature, what does she have to do with our health?
One of the things that really struck me watching some of the interviews with Dr. Tenpenny this morning is the reference to the fact that the Amish community is free of autism.
Well, the Amish community, they still are very much in touch with what I call authentic agriculture. They're eating the traditional foods typically. Not all Amish families are like that, but a lot of them still are. And I think that even those who have migrated away from traditional eating, I think a lot of these families are moving back to that way. Because once we move away from our ancestral diet, that's when we start to see disease. All this disease we're seeing is not due to drug deficiency issues or vaccine deficiency issues. What we're seeing today is that we have denied our bodies of the correct nutrition, and so we're seeing a health crisis.
Okay, here's the chat. Dr. Tenpenny in conversation with Alex Jones.
Welcome back to InfoWars Nightly News. I'm your host, Alex Jones. And all week we've been focusing in on vaccines because all over the United States, but also in other parts of the world like Mexico, governments are now moving towards forced inoculation of children without parental consent. That bill has now passed the House and Senate in California and is on Governor Brown's desk. So I wanted to go back and look at some of the big stories we've seen the last few years concerning vaccines, the H1N1 for flu, Gardasil now being a big national story with Rick Perry being attacked by all the other Republican candidates saying that he was wrong to have attempted that. This is a big breakthrough, really showing that Americans and people all over the world are starting to wake up to the fraud, to the danger, to the carnage that is Big Pharma and the vaccine industry. So they're striking back boldly and launching all sorts of hoaxes, saying nobody's been hurt by Gardasil, despite the fact that the CDC's own adverse reaction report says 18,000 to 20,000+, depending on what report you look at, despite the fact that it's well known Gardasil has resulted in deaths. And joining us to talk about this is author, filmmaker, medical doctor Sherry Tenpenny. Her new DVD film is out, Flu and Flu Vaccines, What's Coming Through the Needle. By the way, it's available at InfoWars.com if you'd like to support our work that we're doing here. I wanted to talk to Dr. Sherry Tenpenny because she's probably the most respected and well-known medical doctor out there breaking down exactly what's happening with these vaccines that are being pushed on us. And she was absolutely accurate when it came to breaking down the carnage that was going to be caused by the H1N1 shot for the flu back in 2009. Doc, it's great to have you here with us tonight.
Thank you so much, Alex. Thanks for asking me.
Where do you want to start first? The new contaminants in the Gardasil, the move for forced inoculations without parental consent, or the fact that in 2009, in hindsight, we learned that you were absolutely on target with what that was going to do?
Well, it's all in the news, isn't it? And it's one thing after another these days, because what you said was exactly right. There are millions and millions of people that are now waking up and looking around. And every single time one of these events happen, whether it was bird flu in 2005, whether it was swine flu in 2009, and then the H1N1, all the difficulties that we had when we saw the H1N1 given to young children and also to pregnant women. And now we've got this whole thing with Gardasil and showing that we've got a biohazard contaminant that's been documented that from samples that have been tested from 5 countries in several different states. And the FDA says that this recombinant HPV, which has been bound to aluminum, so we know that this was actively engaged, is a biohazard. And so it seems like every single time that something like this comes up, many millions more parents wake up, start looking around and saying, what? I should start questioning vaccines. And they start with something very simple, like maybe reading a package insert. They start from there and say, if I can't pronounce it, I don't know what it is, I don't want it injected into me or my children.
Well, if you read the package inserts for H1N1, regular flu shot, and others, it says neurological disorders, cancer, brain damage, convulsions. But then you turn on the news and they've got vaccine company spokespeople not telling you that they work for them or on their payroll, saying no one's ever been hurt by a vaccine. Are we seeing more and more desperate lying because they're scared?
I believe that's true. And every time I hear Dr. Nancy Snyderman on the news talking about how safe and effective vaccines are, trying to assure all of the scared little parents out there, and what she's been saying has been absolutely false. She's actually been giving bad and wrong information. And instead of promoting the Gardasil vaccine for young girls, because now we're trying to give it to young girls and boys starting at 9 years of age, the clinical trials were actually done on 16 to 24-year-olds, not on little girls. We have no idea how long this is going to last. We know there's 100 different HPV strains, 15 of which have been associated with cancer. The vaccine only covers 2, and we have no idea of whether this vaccine is going to have any impact on cervical cancer at all when these girls get to be 30 to 40 years of age. What she should be, what Dr. Nancy Snyderman should be promoting, is that young girls need to be getting regular pap smears, and that has been shown forever to be the most effective way and the most cost-effective way of preventing cervical cancer for the long run.
Well, without getting too graphic, I'm no doctor, but I went and read the insert when the Gardasil first came out, and it said, there on the insert, this is not even proven to actually protect you from the cancer. And then even in the trials, we saw the autoimmune problems, the convulsions, the bleeding, people becoming paralyzed. And then lo and behold, now there's scientists just in the news a few days ago were saying, this DNA, the virus more whole than we first thought, bound to the aluminum, this is the exact type of thing that would cause an autoimmune disease like lupus. And I heard you hinting at the fact that it had been actively bound. I know they looked at multiple sub-manufacturers of this Gardasil and found this had accidentally happened, just like the UN accidentally, with the tetanus shot, had female hormone bound to it. To cause miscarriages in women. Doc, do you think this is being done on purpose and this vaccine could have some other use in it than we're being told?
Well, certainly. I mean, it certainly could, Alex, because one of the other ingredients in the Gardasil vaccine is polysorbate 80. Polysorbate 80 is a preservative that they use in things like ice cream as a stabilizer, and it has been shown to cause infertility in female mice, and it causes testicular atrophy in male mice. And this is in the medical literature. People aren't making this up. And they also know that repeated doses of polysorbate 80 can lead to anaphylactic shock. Polysorbate 80 is also in the DTP vaccine, the DTaP, which they are now pushing on pregnant women for them to get the DTaP vaccine. So it's endless. And I want to go back and address what you said about, are they pushing back very strongly? Of course they are, because you cannot make a living, you cannot make an $800 billion a year industry on the backs of unvaccinated healthy children. Most children who are unvaccinated are rarely sick. They may get the occasional cold or flu or a little bit of a fever, but it comes and goes. And so they are not chronically lifetime ill.
Well, it's like Amish. The epidemic of autism is unknown in their population.
That's correct. And in many other populations, I mean, what we've been pushing for, you and I and all of us who are big vaccine advocates, what we've been pushing for decade now, more than a decade, is for the CDC to finally do the vaccinated versus the unvaccinated study. It seems as though at some point we're going to have to just raise the money and do it ourselves, because the CDC doesn't want to know the answer. They don't want to see a whole bunch of unvaccinated kids who never miss school, are on no chronic daily medications, who are doing extraordinarily well, never get sick. They do not want to stand that up against a bunch of vaccinated kids who are on a whole bunch of medications and have a lifetime worth of injuries.
Well, doctor, what you pointed out back in 2009, out of the gates, you said, look, from previous studies, we know that when you take this H1N1 flu shot or one that's similar, it's going to reduce your regular immunity to regular flu. And then they had the big Canadian mainline study that showed, what was it, a doubling in your chances of getting regular seasonal flu if you took the H1N1. And then I remember it was you and others that discovered that they were admitting that they might have had a plan previously to put simulants in the previous year's vaccine. And there's a lot of evidence they were actually triggering this H1N1 program. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, I can, Alex. And it's also the fact that it does lower the immune system, and you can get the flu shot and still get sick. I've looked back, and I talk about this in the flu DVD that is now available through InfoWars, is that I've looked all at the data from the CDC over the last 11 years. And every year there are testing sites where they take nasal swabs and they send them to the CDC and they say, okay, you've got all these flu-like symptoms. What is causing you to be sick? Is it influenza or is it some other bug? Because the CDC says the reason you have to get annual flu shots is because the antibodies wear off and you have to have an exact match. The one that's in the flu shot has to match the one that's in circulation in order to keep you from getting sick. The amount of people who actually get sick from the flu, that it matches what's in the flu shot over the last 11 years, has been less than 13%.
You've been listening, folks, to the conversation between Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, who is coming to London tonight. And a controversial talk show host, Alex Jones, in the United States. And with me this morning, Pam Colleen, to set up this visit in London tonight at the Lamplighter. Sold out, but apparently there are some standing room places available. A lot of interest, Pam, in vaccines, and a lot of confusion.
A lot of confusion, a lot of people questioning the system. I mean, when we see that the ingredients, Sherry's correct, when you look at the actual package insert and read it very, very carefully, all the fine print, you'll start questioning why you're injecting your body with these chemicals. What are the ramifications of putting together this cocktail and injecting it directly into your bloodstream? 80% of your immune system is the actual lining of your gut. I think that if we spent more time actually nurturing the gut lining, which is where the majority of your immune system is, I think we would actually see much better results in terms of boosting our immune system. Injecting chemicals directly into the bloodstream really doesn't make a lot of sense. It's completely illogical when you think about it.
And yet, in the midst of all of this, you know, and all the warnings about this vaccine for HPV infections, this report from the CDC this morning, saying that HPV infections among teenage girls have dropped by 56%. Are they lying?
But what does that prove in 10 or 20 or 30 years from now? Is this information actually going to prove to us that these girls are going to be healthier for it? What we want is we want health. That's what we're trying to achieve here. And since we can die from thousands of diseases, does that mean that we're supposed to be vaccinated thousands and thousands of times?
But people are going to say, listen, Pam Colleen.
It's great marketing. It's great marketing.
No, but is it true?
Yeah. What does the truth mean in terms of the longevity of your health, the quality of your health?
But people would say, you know, and I'm just being the devil's advocate for people who are thinking, what more do you want? HPV infections down 56%. That's dramatic. That's what we want.
A lot of people are going to look at that, and yes, they're going to believe that it's been a beneficial thing, but it's so short-sighted. I say, what about all the other diseases that these girls could die from? How are these girls going to be in terms of their health in the long run? These are real questions, Andy, and they're not being answered. And what they're citing in the media is part of the campaign to sell a product. But people are not asking enough questions. They're not discerning enough to say, is there possibly a better way to protect their children from any kind of health crisis?
We're coming down to the bottom of the hour. We have to take a short break for a news update. Pam's going to stay with us in the next half hour. We want to talk about this, open up the phone lines. This other dramatic report, I want to ask Pam about that, and that is obesity now being regarded, labeled as a disease. Is that a good thing? And also the subject of our first half hour, these shocking reports about these London doctors facing all these allegations of malpractice being allowed to continue, and doctors prescribing Lipitor along with other drugs causing the deaths of their patients, something Pam has been warning about forever. So much to talk about with the phone lines open in our next half hour right here in London today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
One of the other ingredients in the Gardasil vaccine is polysorbate 80. Polysorbate 80 is a preservative that they use in things like ice cream as a stabilizer, and it has been shown to cause infertility in female mice, and it causes testicular atrophy in male mice. And this is in the medical literature. People aren't making this up. We know there's 100 different HPV strains, 15 of which have been associated with cancer. The vaccine only covers 2, and we have no idea of whether this vaccine is going to have any impact on cervical cancer at all when these girls get to be 30 to 40 years of age.
Is it any wonder people who are listening this morning are tearing their hair out? They're hearing this one report that says this vaccine against HPV, the sexually transmitted infection, is having dramatic results, with HPV infections among teenage girls down 56%. And yet we're telling them about Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, who is coming to London to say, tonight at the Lamplighter, to say the vaccine basically is a recipe for death for some people and serious side effects for others, Pam. So there's a lot of confusion about this issue.
A lot of confusion about a lot of drugs on the marketplace today. I think that we need to be more discerning. I think we need to ask more questions. Look at the stories you've been breaking all morning, Andy. People need to take a step back and say, is there perhaps a better way?
Let's go to the phones now and see if our listeners are confused. Jenny, what's your reaction to, you know, this contradiction, this report that says that the HPV infections are down 56%, and then you hear Dr. Tenpenny coming to London tonight at the Lamplighter saying pretty much the opposite?
Yeah, it's very confusing, and there's a lot of young girls out there that could be hurt by it. But I was wondering, can she tell me anything about the shingles vaccine?
She's doing an entire presentation tonight at the Lamplighter Inn, and we're still trying to reach her by phone. I think that there's a call coming in now. I don't know if that'll be her, but she's just not here right now to answer the question. But they are going to be potentially taking in people for standing room spots at 6:30 at the Lamplighter. If you want to go, I'm sure she'll be covering that topic.
Jenny, tell me about your thoughts about vaccines generally.
I don't know. We've had a lot of them, but you still see a lot of people getting sick, you know. And I know a lot of children that have autism, and every mother that I ask, you know, when did this start and that, they all seem to say it started when they got their vaccines when they were little.
Why do you think that there's no autism epidemic in the Amish community?
Because they don't get the vaccines. They eat right. They don't get vaccines. It seems to make sense that that's what it is.
Well, it's heartrending to me that people are given these two flows of information, these two various camps, and they really, really have to do their homework. Let's go to Tyler. Tyler, thanks for waiting.
Thank you. I've got a few points to make about what's been said, and there's a great deal of falsehood in what's been put on the air. The first is that the Amish do get autism. The prevalence is 1 in 271. And they also get vaccines. If you want evidence that they get autism, it's in the International Society for Autism Research. And Saturday, May 22nd, 2010, a talk was given, and it was for the International Meeting of Autism. And they studied the Amish because they're a very well-studied genetic group, and they found a prevalence of 1 in 271. There's nothing in their old order religious beliefs that prohibits them from having vaccines, and they do get vaccinated. Also, about the point of autism in and the link to vaccines, there was only ever one peer-reviewed study done, and it was in The Lancet, and it was done, I think, around 1999. And this study found that there was a link between the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine and autism. And everyone who was involved in this vaccine, except for one person who's since been discredited, recused themselves. That means they stepped away from the article, and the reason why.
Let me ask you about the figure you quoted from the Amish community. 1 in 271 what?
Yeah. 1 in 200 for, like, it's approximately one child in 271 children has autism. Mm-hmm.
And in the main population is about 1 in 80 now, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And going down, going up really to 1 in 50. So it's very scary. That's what's so frustrating about all of this, Tyler, is you're getting these two flows of information, and you just want to pound your fist on the table and say, well, somebody give me the facts. What are your thoughts about vaccines generally?
My thoughts about vaccines generally are that they're effective. If I can use the example of the MMR vaccine, this actually, when that information broke in The Lancet, it actually caused a massive drop in measles, mumps, and the MMR vaccine being used in the UK, and because of that, there's actually an increase in measles. Like, measles was basically eradicated in the UK, and it's now returned.
Well, Tyler, we're trying to sort out all these different points of view. Every phone line is lit up. Tyler, appreciate the call. Let's go to John. John, your thoughts on vaccines?
John, Andy, I'd like to ask Pam, there's a recent new vaccine on the market for shingles. Has she heard any reports or any studies that have been done on that?
I look at the health of the population as a whole. I do come across research that shows that the shingles vaccine is going to increase one's propensity to develop, the chickenpox?
Yes.
Yes. And so I have seen research to show the association between the two. But again, I look deeper than this issue itself, because we have to ask ourselves, why are we getting these infections in the first place? And when you look at the history of vaccines, you see that the vaccines that we're using on the marketplace today, these diseases were on their way out before the vaccines hit the market. What happened was, is we were using better sanitation and hygiene measures in the early part of the 1900s. And these actually have better associations with the reduction of infectious diseases than vaccines.
The situation is, once as a child you have the chickenpox, you always retain the chickenpox virus in your system. And this new vaccine that they brought out now, you have to go and get it out of refrigeration and have it in your inoculation within a half an hour and that. And I was just wondering if you had any information as to good, bad, or indifferent.
I'm not a big fan of vaccines in general. I think that they make people too complacent. I think that people rely on these vaccines.
So what you're saying is the vaccine, people think, well, now I'm guarded against it, I'll never get shingles?
I just think it gives people a false sense of security. You could die from thousands of diseases. What can you do to prevent this situation from happening? What can you do to basically make yourself healthy so that you are not a good host for these diseases in the first place?
Well, apparently there's no prevention for getting shingles.
Well, I suppose that's what the pharmaceutical industry would want you to believe.
John, we have to move on. John, we have to give everybody equal time here. Well, let's go to another John. John, go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to, I sort of agree with what Pam's saying about, vaccinations and so on. The one confusing part, and maybe she can answer this question, she talks about eating like our ancestors did and trying to build up your own immune system. But, you know, our ancestors ate a lot of sugar. And the Amish eat a lot of sugar. I remember my my in-laws, he lived to be 94, always had pie on the table. Like, that's a lot of sugar.
Right, but the key thing is if to understand the ancestral diet, you have to go back many, many generations, right? In the 1700s, we only ate about 4 pounds of sugar per person per year. But when you look back when we were hunter-gatherers, for example, we were much, much healthier. And it was when we invented agriculture about 10,000 years ago, that's when researchers found that we started to shrink in size, our lifespan decreased, we started to see the rise of infectious diseases, we start to see things like anemia, we start to see osteoporosis, we start to see physical degeneration happening among human populations. But when we see all the assaults done to our food supply, of course, sugar being introduced, certainly in the 1900s, we now eat about 150 pounds of sugar per person per year, and that's not doing us any favors in terms of our immune system.
John, let's leave it there. We want to take a short break. Pam, sorry to interrupt. We want to take a short break, and when we come back, this new report, which is now labeling obesity as a disease. I want to get your thoughts on that, whether it's a good thing, whether it's a bad thing, whether it's true. We'll be back with that in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. Well, I am delighted that we have now connected with Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, who is crossing the border, I understand. Dr. Tenpenny, are you there?
I am. Thank you so much.
Welcome to Canada. We've been talking about you, not behind your back, I want to tell you. We're talking about your event in London tonight. Tell us about your event tonight.
Well, the event tonight is to talk about the title of the talk is Vaccine Developers, Are They Heroes or Villains? And we're going to start with smallpox, and we're going to talk a little bit about polio and some other vaccines that have come down the pipeline. Since children now, at least in the U.S., are given 40 doses of 16 different vaccines, and there are about 20 in the pipeline, I think if we start from the beginning and show the way that this vaccination series developed, I think it will be very, very eye-opening for people.
So since the inception of all these vaccines on the marketplace, Sherry, are we better off for all of this?
No, we're not. Because even if the vaccines worked, which was a big discussion of whether you believe they did or not, the trade-off for eliminating a short list of infectious diseases in exchange for the very long list and very damaged children and adults, the trade-off has not been an equal trade at all.
I want to ask you, Doctor, if I could, it's interesting that you should be arriving today, just as this report has come out of the U.S. That HPV infections among teenage girls have, because of the vaccine, apparently, Gardasil, dropped by 56%. Your comment?
Interestingly enough, before they started doing the research on Gardasil and the HPV in women in the United States, they found that less than 4% of women actually had the HPV strains that were contained within the Gardasil vaccine. So if it dropped by 50% and it went from 4% to 2% in exchange for those 26 girls that have died from this vaccine, I don't think that's a fair trade-off either.
Well, how many injuries have happened since the vaccine hit the marketplace? Not just the deaths, but the injuries.
You know, I don't know that number right off the top of my head, but there was a report that came out this last week of over $5 million in vaccine injury claims that have been paid out just for the Gardasil vaccine. I know that the U.S. government has the vaccine injury compensation program, for which they paid over $2.2 billion in vaccine injuries. And those are just the ones that have been compensated, because there are tens of thousands of other people who've never filed a claim or that their claim was not adjudicated.
And a lot of people don't report adverse events. I mean, only 1 to 10% of adverse events are actually reported.
That's correct.
So there's a lot of people out there potentially who've had effects and didn't say a word.
Doctor.
Many of the people in the government agencies who are heavily promoting vaccination, what they talk about in terms of an injury is they only look at the most severe case scenarios, such as a death. But there's a very long spectrum of vaccine injury that goes from asthma, allergies, eczema, ADD, ADHD, a very long list of neurological disorders, seizure disorders, autoimmune disorders that the government agencies do not count in their vaccine injury claims.
Doctor, I watch ABC News every evening after I watch the CTV local news, and I'm always, well, I want to laugh and cry when I hear the drug commercials, because most of the commercials on ABC Evening News with Diane Sawyer seem to be for drugs, whether it's Lipitor or one of the many other drugs. And the first 30 seconds is always about how dramatically they will affect your life and how good life will be. And then they go on for what seems like 3 minutes about, you know, how your eyes are going to fall out. You're going to get permanent diarrhea. You're going to have intestinal problems. And do you and depression and even death? And I'm going, who would take these drugs? But do you think we have a generation which has been raised with the notion that for whatever ails you, there's a pill or there's a vaccine?
Yes, we've had multiple generations that have come to believe that. Instead of looking for natural cures and looking for ways to keep your own body's intrinsic immune system healthy from the inside out, we are looking for an external solution to an internal problem that we've caused mostly by bad diet, genetically modified food, fluoride in our water, and also by injecting all these known carcinogens into children starting at 2 months of age.
Now, don't you find, though, that this makes people complacent, that if they know that there's a vaccine or a drug out there, then why should I do anything natural? Why should I eat better? You know, are you noticing that people just simply don't want to take control of their health?
I do believe that there's a certain portion of that, but I think that the pendulum is swinging. I think that there's many more people who are extraordinarily conscious about what's growing their own food, eating organic foods, trying to purify their water, getting exercise, getting sleep, and all of these things. I think that the pendulum has started to swing as people are waking up and realizing that the cost of healthcare in our country and in Canada is going to implode the entire economy. And unless we start taking self-responsibility and turning things backwards and looking at health instead of treating disease, both of our countries are going to go down the tube.
Let's talk about the flu vaccine research itself, how limited it is, how short-sighted this report, for example, from the CDC. I mean, how many years would it take before they could actually prove that vaccines work?
Well, I don't think you can prove a negative. Mm-hmm. Which means that when the vaccines are, if you're given a flu shot and you do not get the flu, is it because you got the flu shot? Is it because your body was intrinsically more healthy? Is it because your vitamin D level was up above 80 where it's known to protect you from getting the flu? Is it, or is it because you weren't even exposed to the influenza virus?
Doctor, we're almost out of time, and I have two really key questions. If you were the parent of a girl in grade 7, and you were concerned about her getting a cervical cancer, would you submit to the system and have her take Gardasil?
Absolutely not, under any circumstances.
Okay, and the second question is this, and this one is so vital, even if people who are listening have no interest in health issues whatsoever. You just dropped a bombshell. We've been saying the same thing. If we don't dramatically change our approach to good health, literally the economies of our two countries, Canada and the United States, are at stake because we just can't afford to pay the bills anymore.
And not only that, but the DNA of the human race is at stake. It is at stake with all of the vaccines and all the macro chemicals that we are polluting the human body with. It's more than just economics. I think it's a species issue. And that's one of the things I'm going to talk about tonight at the seminar.
Terrific. Pam, the seminar just down the street on Wellington Road, 6:30, the Lamplighter.
6:30 p.m. tonight at the Lamplighter Inn, and it is sold out, but apparently they're going to be letting some people in for standing room only. So if you want to attend tonight at 6:30, I would highly recommend that you show up and line up at, say, as early as maybe 6 o'clock, because these standing room only spots are going to be very, very limited.
Doctor, is there any vaccine you feel warmly about?
I don't feel warm about injecting known toxins into little children or into adults. Health is an inside-out phenomenon, and there's so many things you can do to keep healthy without vaccines and, for the most part, without pharmaceutical drugs.
Wow.
Yep. And for those of us who are anti-chemical per se, we are the enemies, right? If you are anti-chemical, this is the mindset, Andy, if you're anti-chemical, then you're anti-progress. So you're going to see people out there defending these chemicals. But really, I think that we need to look at the bigger picture here and see that they're just not working for us.
You mean the doctor's trip is not sponsored by Pfizer?
Although we don't see too many sponsorships by Mother Nature, unfortunately.
Doctor, have you been in Canada before?
Oh, yes. We love your country. In fact, when we travel, we frequently claim that we're Canadian citizens. We love your country.
What do you love most?
The scenery, the people, and your Canadian wines.
good.
Canadian wines.
Yes. And actually, tomorrow, or on Saturday, we're going to go to a Niagara-on-the-Lake, and we're going to go to a couple of our favorite vineyards over there and spend the day. We usually take a couple of trips up there a year.
Wow.
Yeah, it's very pretty.
And hold your nose when you pay the taxes on the gasoline. But yes, Niagara-on-the-Lake is a wonderful spot. My wife and I go there often. Doctor, have a great visit at the Lamplighter tonight, 6:30, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a great weekend.
Persistence pays off.
And her website, I should say, is drtenpenny.com. That's drtenpenny, TENPENNY.com.
Real quick comment on obesity as a disease, good or bad?
Well, there's a dark side in that. Yes, in the initial phases, of course, the medical system is going to make a huge amount of money because it's now labeled as a disease. But in the long run, after people start realizing that the drugs are not going to fix this problem, then the insurance industry, the province, their back is going to be against the wall. They're going to have to come up with better solutions than surgery and drugs because they won't work.
I'm just concerned with people who are suffering from obesity, one-third of us, hear that it's a disease, just say, well, there's nothing I can do. Let's go have a pizza.
Well, obesity is a complex issue. There's a lot of variables.
Pam, what an hour it's been. What a morning it's been on medical issues. We thank you for joining us. 11 o'clock news coming up next. When we come back,